zig weitere erfolgreiche Jahre. We're a community. And here's our radio station.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week.
I want them to realize the power that they have when they unpack their own stories, where you come from, and that is your strength. That's what's really important.
I'm Lynn Borton, host of Choose to Be Curious, a show all about curiosity. We talk about research and theory, but mostly it's conversations about how curiosity shows up in work and life. Today on Sprouts, we're talking about curiosity and belonging. This is a story about sharing ideas, and most preciously, sharing the people we know and value. Or maybe it's a story about the power of weak ties. An idea from sociologist Mark Granovetter that acquaintances, weaker ties, are likely to be more influential than close friends, stronger ties, particularly in social networks. In 2016, I stumbled on something called narrative medicine. I was looking for traditional professions that had developed any form of curiosity training. Narrative medicine came up, a healthcare approach built around sharing stories. But I had no idea where to find a practitioner to interview. So I turned to my trusty Facebook network, those weaker ties, and within an hour I had a name, Dr. Rhea Kerbeck, originally of Syria, then at a VA hospital. Rhea's compassionate work with veterans pushed against the hard reality, as Maya Angelou powerfully observed, there is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you. I'm thinking today's guest, Kiran Singh Sarah, may do the same thing. I met Kiran through more weak ties. Former guest Andres Marquez Lara met Kiran through a friend and then thought Kiran and I would enjoy one another. Can you feel the network winding outward, the fine web connecting more and more of us? Kiran Singh Sarah is an award-winning storytelling industry leader, folklorist, arts and culture strategist, creative thought leader, and past president of the International Storytelling Center. He's collaborated on special arts and peace-building projects by invitation of Yo-Yo Ma and Dolly Parton, and been recognized at the UN as a champion of peace. And now, he's here with us. I love my weak ties. Last night, I had a dream about Kiran telling a story under a soft, warm spotlight. He was center stage. That felt right. Kiran center storytelling. And then I saw it. Centering someone's story centers their belonging. And belonging was exactly where Kiran and I wanted to center our conversation. I'm delighted to have Kiran Singh Sarah join me today. So welcome, Kiran.
Thank you, Lynn. It's wonderful to be here, and a beautiful introduction. I love that. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm really excited about this. And I want to link more of this fine web of ours, because you not only have a narrative medicine link in the Choose to Be Curious context, but it's also been, I discovered, among your many community empowerment efforts. Tell me about Storytelling, A Gift of Hope.
You know, it was interesting when you talked about narrative medicine, because, you know, it's a term that I learned about in the work I do. Obviously, I've got this sort of frontline seat in the ways that we imagine and use and think about storytelling across different fields and different sectors. So I think about narrative medicine as something that is maybe a term that's sort of emerging. It's definitely a sort of like an area, a field of practice. But I also think about it as something that, as someone has been so involved in storytelling for many years and obviously have a sort of frontline seat with storytelling artists and practitioners, I don't think it's necessarily a new thing. It's such an ancient practice.
Yeah.
It's very an indigenous practice. It's the practice of our ancestors. And, you know, when I think about that, I met this man for dinner in New York City in Brooklyn once, and he was from Sierra Leone. And he said that in his village, the traditional village in Sierra Leone, The word for medicine is story.
Wow.
Well, think about it. You know, and Tom Belk is a Cherokee elder, someone who I work with. And he says that in his culture, in his tradition, story is the cosmology of his people.
Mm-hmm.
How do we learn? How do we connect with one another? What are the? It's not just the stories that we're used to in, like, you know, the linear. It's the tapestry. It's the web. It's the maps of our imagination. There's no one story that defines us, and it's continually flexing. And it's this idea that, you know, stories is, brings healing, but it can, we can learn so much from it. We can understand the world. It can make sense of it, ourselves and our place in the world. And this essentially is the medicine for society. So I think narrative medicine, but it's a beautiful idea in the way that narrative is being recognized more and more so in the social impact sectors, in the medicine, in healthcare. And, you know, I've got to sort of develop some of that stuff in a contemporary context, particularly during the pandemic, you know, working with frontline healthcare workers. But I do think it's not necessarily new, it's drawing upon ancient traditions.
Yeah, yeah. It's there anyway, isn't it? Whether we name it or not.
It is there, you know, and even when I think about early GPs, physicians that I had when I was younger, we didn't just go to them. They came to our home. Dr. Hamber, he came to our home. He greeted us in a traditional Sikh greeting. He was a white English man, a typical English gentleman, come to our home. We were immigrant family in England. He would spend time with us. He would sit on the couch. He would talk to us. We'd have food. And I know that he was part of this perhaps more traditional practice, because he understood the medicine that he's administering is more than just pills or formulas. It's something deeper. It's something about being part of that, building trust,
yeah,
building love, building comfort, building connection, building relationships.
Well, of course, that's what storytelling in my mind is so much about. It's a way of building relationships. It's a way we explain ourselves to one another. It's a way we understand one another. And it's so multi-sided. There's a storyteller, but that doesn't matter if there's no one listening. There's got to be a story receiver or absorber somehow.
I think storytelling is used in many different ways, and many people call themselves storytellers, and that's not a bad thing. But I think there's a difference between what we hear on the news, what we hear in social media, what we hear, see in the written form, to what takes place between two people.
Mm.
The sacredness of two people sitting on their porch, around the fire, around the hearth, connecting even on contemporary through Zoom or multimedia. There's a famous story, a famous storyteller that I love called Kevin Kling. And he said, storytelling is like two wings of a bird. One is the teller and the other is the listener, but we need both wings to fly.
Yeah.
And that kind of really sort of sums it up for me in the tradition of storytelling. It's the sacredness of what happens between two people. It can happen between more, but it's really a call and response tradition.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So when you think about storytelling, and I'm going to get us to belonging in a minute. I said we were going to start there. But when you think about storytelling, do you think of it in a curiosity context?
Yes, in many ways, I think it's the birthplace of storytelling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a kind of a metaphor or a visual image that we have in the storytelling field, in our arena, and particularly in the artistry of storytelling. And it's called sharing the fire. And it's this fire that we sit around. And we've done it for thousands of years. We do it today in many different contexts. It's what happens, our ancestors did. But I say that it began before that. It began before the fire. It began when our ancestors looked up into the sky, they saw the stars, and they began to use their imagination, and they wondered what was out there. They mm-hmm. wondered what was at the end of the ocean. They wondered what was at that beneath the land, the earth. And this became the birthplace of stories. And we still do it to this day. We still imagine. We're continually imagining the world, the land beyond us, the future, what happens beyond. And we create stories from that. It's equally about the future as it is about the past.
Yeah.
So I think curiosity is really embedded. I think about it as imagination, but curiosity and imagination is so intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's a beautiful, beautiful sacred art form, but at the same time, it can be used to manipulate and create danger, and unethically can be used to kind of manipulate or destroy communities. It's a powerful force.
I think that's exactly right. It is very powerful. And when used for good, that's a wonderful thing. And when used for nefarious and ugly purposes, it's equally powerful and really mm-hmm. dangerous. Yeah. So as I thought about your work and became more acquainted with it, I began to think that maybe belonging is the thread that runs through all of it. Because I think storytelling is a way of sort of articulating where we belong and how we belong. And I think about your work in peace building and conflict resolution. And if all of us felt everybody belonged wherever it was that we were, then a lot of those problems would go away, it seems to me. Does that resonate?
It does. It does. I think there's belonging, building a sense of belonging. And it's not this sort of happy, clappy kind of like peace building approach. For me, it's really about building this sort of deeper connection, this understanding that behind all stories is this desire to be loved, the desire to love, the desire to share our sorrow, our pain, our joy. And beneath, you know, not necessarily beneath, behind these, it's universal. And it's not to say that we have to agree. And that's the beauty of it. It's the idea that we stem from something that's very united. We remove the kind of the illusion that of separation. Then we almost kind of, in a very Buddhist kind of spiritual sense, we kind of get to the kind of interconnectedness of the oneness of all things. And I think there's a story that's really powerful and really universal and perhaps even almost spiritual, you know, in that sense. They say that, you know, a greatest force in the universe is the power of thought, but story is the greatest means to communicate that. But as a peace builder, stories started to really emerge for me. I started to see the power of it as a peace builder post 9/11. And when I could sort of start bringing people together from different faith backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds, and people could simply share their personal narratives with their folk narratives or their cultural narratives and spend time together, then through that process, they build that sense of belonging. They build that empathy. They build that connection. They build that potential to shared values, you know, and realizing some of these stories, the ways that we've been informed come from these values, these stories of our life. And there's so much that does connect us. And it kind of, in a way, is one of the most powerful forces to deconstruct or even dismantle constructs of difference, state, religion, you know, nationality, political affiliation. We can go beyond these constructs that we've made to separate us, to realize there's something stronger, more powerful, deeper, more interconnected, and even complex.
So let me ask, you're a Sikh, born in England. Your mother was born in Kenya, your father in India, and your brother in Uganda. You lived in Scotland for many years, and now you live in Johnson City, Tennessee. You've had this multi-migration life. What has made you feel like you belong?
It emerged over time, you know, and I think, you know, I have to remember that the nature of my work today has made me deeply reflect, right, on my past.
Yeah.
It's made me think about when I advocate for why this art form is so important in peace building, in healthcare, in social change, whatever it might be, I have to communicate its power, its value. And so I reflected. I started to really reflect back on my early beginnings. And, you know, I was born in England, but I was born to parents that fled genocide, fled persecution. They had 48 hours to leave their home, Uganda, at the time in 1972. But they couldn't take any personal possessions with them. They couldn't take their objects, couldn't take their house, couldn't take their money, right? They couldn't take anything. The only thing that my mother got through was her wedding jewelry that was stuffed into my brother's diaper, who was 6 months old. They landed in a cold country in the middle of winter. The far-right neo-Nazis stormed the airport, so the plane had to divert. and they almost hitchhiked down, and they got sanctuary, found a place, went to a small town on the south coast of England. 4 years later, I was born. Now, imagine that. That was also a time when there was a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment. It was violent. It was a violent time, yeah. Too. You'd walk out of the home, my house, which was safe, but outside was kind of dangerous. There was, you know, skinheads and green bomber jackets and DM boots, white laces. And it was kind of like, it was dangerous. But when I was bullied in the playground and told to go back to where you come from, I would literally run across the street because that's my home. That's where I lived. And my mother would tell me these stories. But she would tell me these stories of times of where I came from. She would tell me these stories of her home, where she grew up, and talked about her school, talk about life in the East Africa. She talked about my grandparents who were freedom fighters and from rural beginnings. Right? And I could visualize these places. I started to understand, and I guess curiosity in my own upbringing. Who am I? Mm. Where do I come from? Mm-hmm. What makes me different? What makes me unique? What makes me the same? And as I unpacked that, I realized I came from, you know, a strong tradition of warriors, of freedom fighters, activists that took on the world's largest empire and defeated them. I come from proud people. And then she would say, go back into that playground and go tell them who you really are. So when I think about this as an educator, as a teacher, with any kids I'm working with, not just kids, but adults, like, I want them to realize the power that they have when they unpack their own stories, where you come from. And that is your strength. That's what's really important in what I do. It's not to tell people what story to tell, not to impose, to help people realize the power that exists within them when you start to cultivate that. And I think when we do that, it's not a sort of large leap to understand that other people's stories matter as well when we understand our own matter. And that sense of perhaps confidence, affirming of an identity, the ability to challenge one's identity and create new ones is also part of that. And to be in that place and the driving seat of my own script, I can create that. I can be at the center of culture, and I can see and I can create the story of a world that I wish to see. And I have the power to do that, every single one of us. And so I think that's a really important, when I've gone through that experience, my goal in life is to ensure that people that historically marginalized or haven't had that opportunity get that opportunity so that we can bring more balance to a world that's kind of unfair or unequal.
You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. I'm Lynn Borton, host of Choose to Be Curious, here with Kiran Singh Sarah, talking about curiosity and belonging. One of the things that people say to me is, oh, I don't have any stories to tell, or, you know, I can't really imagine telling a story about myself. Now, I come from a long line of storytellers, so the idea of not having a story is kind of, wow, that's hard for me to imagine. And yet, I think lots of people feel that way and don't have a sense of, if there is a story, how they would ever get it out and share it, because there's a fear of tremendous judgment. You know, oh, I won't do a good job with it. It's like, whoa, but it's your story. You'll do a fine job with it. Nobody else could tell your story but you. But you're making me think that some of that process is also in sort of excavating, you know, mining the wonderful stories within us that remind us that we belong in our own skins.
You know, it's very true. And I try to really break it down when I'm working with people or communities, and not from the kind of the DC roundtable, the narrative world or the, but I'm talking about everyday communities. That's where my heart really lies. And when I try to break it down, that everyone does have stories, but you don't have one.
Right.
And you don't have one. You have millions, you know, and you have multiple ways. And it is the context. You know, my dad would say exactly the same thing. Oh, son, I don't have a story to tell. But then we're like traveling through East Africa. I'm collecting family stories. We're sitting outside. We're eating masala chicken and drinking whiskey, and he becomes Mark Twain, right? Because the context is right. The context is right. And, you know, because he's talking about his place, his imagination. He's talking about things that really helping come alive. You know, what when we help people come alive, that's what happens. What do we do at Thanksgiving? You know, we invite our friends or our neighbors to our kitchen table. When you come to the kitchen table, you're not talking in facts, you're talking in story, you're connecting, you're sharing gifts. You don't come here to my kitchen table so I can change the way you think. I want to really learn about you, and I want you to learn about me. And let's take the kitchen table and let's apply that into society.
Yeah.
Right? Our conferences, our workplaces, our drive-throughs, you know, everywhere, our plazas, everywhere, main streets. These kitchen tables is this, for me, the symbol of what America is and can be.
Mm.
And as an immigrant, I say it's the humble kitchen table. And that's the tapestry, it's the Cena Americana, it's the potluck. That's who we are. That's who we can be. And that's what we, that's our strength, right? I have to also say that, remember, storytelling is not just in the oral tradition. It's the way we move our bodies. It's, you know, I worked with people who were congenitally deafblind, you know, through a Helen Keller program. And that taught me that there are multiple ways we tell stories. It's through our movement. It's through the mobility and just our little toe. It's the sounds that we make. It's the way I see the world or want to. It's my curiosity for that world, right? You know, it's my desire to understand what's behind that wall. You know, what's behind that corner? What does it feel like to get wet in the snow or the rain, right? What does it feel like to fall in love, right? That's what it's all about, you know? And I think it's our recipes from our grandmother, right? It's the fabrics we put in our house. It's the stickers we put on our car, the way we decorate our front porch. It's all part of our narrative. It's all part of our story. I prefer to use the word story because it's more accessible. But it's that broader story. It's the story of the tapestry. It's the multiple. And we can start at any place. And you do not have to be this TEDx talks. You do not have to be this elevator pitch. Forget the elevator pitch. You went out in the 80s. Right? Do justice to the story that needs to be told. And that can take time. And if you want to return to narrative medicine, that was the core aspect of what I was teaching online to healthcare workers at the beginning of the pandemic. I said to these nurse practitioners, I said, you know, in 100 years from now, when people look back, they may look at the, you know, Fox News or CNN and read the paper, what happened with this moment. But I think they're more interested in your stories from healthcare. What was it like for everyday people on that front? What were you grappling with at home, at work, you know, your children? You know, what was the... So I encourage them, just every day, write a journal, write a little note, cultivate it like permaculture. Permaculture suggests that we don't impose a plant or a shrub. We water it, we pay attention, and see what naturally occurs, what should emerge. It's the same with storytelling. See what naturally emerges from you. And it can be expressed through art, through dance, through painting, through oral tradition. Talking to my children, talking to my grandma, talking to my best friend. Right? It would naturally emerge. And that's the beauty of stone. It's core to our essence of our humanity. And it's, I think, part of that role. When we discover that essence of our humanity, then we discover something that's so much more beautiful, right? And so much that can connect us. And this beauty of the world and the universe that we're part of and integral to.
Oh, wow. I could sit with you all day. Oh my gosh. So you've already done this. You've already given us this amazing analogy of the kitchen table, but now I'm going to ask you to join me in my big jar of wannabe analogies.
Oh, wow.
Are you game for this?
Yes, I'm nervous.
No. You've already shown me you can do great analogies. I'm not the least bit worried. Okay. Okay. So I have these slips of paper. We're going to make an analogy to whatever is on them. I have one for you, one for me, and one for the audience. Okay, yours is fork. How is curiosity like a fork? Mine is door hinge. And I have one for the audience. So do you want to go first or you want me to give it a go?
Oh, God, now I just want to tell a story about a fork. I have a story about a fork. I guess my brain's gone straight to that. A fork has prongs. It has this elongated part. So I would say it can be bendable too, you know. Mm-hmm. So maybe the idea that we have this static object, but curiosity can bend. It can have multiple prongs. It can be created, and for one functional item, it can turn into a beautiful aesthetic bracelet.
Lovely.
So imagine a curiosity can happen when we use our lateral thinking.
Oh, I like it. Now I really want to hear that story. Okay. How is curiosity like a door hinge? I'm going to go with our connector theme here. A door hinge connects two things that can actually be moving in opposition and in different directions, but they stay connected. And I think curiosity is a way of allowing us to sort of move in different directions, but stay connected. So I see it. And audience, yours is high heels. How is curiosity like high heels? Let me know. Instagram, Facebook, hashtag analogy. Well, Karen, oh my gosh. Thank you so much for this. This has really just been delightful.
Lynn, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this. I've really, really enjoyed our conversation. It's been wonderful. You know, I've been in this country 13 years. I choose to be here. I'm an immigrant. I choose to be here. I'm not forced to be here. I wasn't running away from anything. I came here because I see the potential of this nation. And what I would love for people to realize when whoever they vote for is when you look around, see the beauty of a country that no one person looks American, right? See that beauty of the stories where we come from, the stories that we're making up, the stories that we're infusing. We can look to Europe, we can look to Africa, look to South America, but we can also look within and cultivate something that I think has the potential to be this incredible cultural asset for us and also for the world. And I think this nation has the potential to be an incredible peace player for the world. I believe in that. It's not some written document, it's a belief that I see as an immigrant. And it's an observation. I want Americans to realize that there's so much beauty if we can cultivate this cultural, multicultural society. And we can be, it doesn't have to be the greatest superpower or the economic power. It can be a great cultural power that can bring peace and justice to our world. And I want people to cultivate that story, the potential of the story we have to be. It's not static. It's complex. It's diverse. Things we have to grapple with, we have to grapple with them. But we have that potential if we can work through the broken to get to the masterpiece.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to a conversation about curiosity and work and life. I'm Lynn Borton, and my guest has been Karen Singh Sirrah. Music you heard included Home, Home at Last by Warm Body via Blue Dot Sessions. Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production you'd like to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's U-R-S-U-L-A at pacifica.org. I'm Lynn Borton in Arlington, Virginia. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
Es so tönt heute das Radio. Aber nicht das Radio Lora. Würden wir jemals Justin Bieber spielen, dann höchstens rückwärts. Vielleicht ist da sogar eine Botschaft versteckt.
Was Lora hoch super.
Lora, was hoch super.
Damit wir weiterhin klare Botschaften senden können und Musik gegen den Mainstream spielen. Unterstützt uns auf lora.ch.
Also ja, auch der Justin Bieber darf natürlich spenden, aber vorwärts spielen wir ihn deshalb noch lange nicht.